This is Detailing Addiction. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. In studio with me today is David Donaldson, who is a National Certified Addiction Counselor, Level 2, and the CEO of the Atlanta Healing Center. We're going to talk about an important topic, and that topic being e-cigarettes. What's the truth and what's the risk? This came to my mind after a discussion that I was having with my husband the other evening about the Monitoring the Future study that was just released. As many of you may know, at the University of Michigan, for the last 40 years, they have been submitting questions to 8th, 10th, and 12th graders around the nation. Currently, I think they have about 40,000 students, 40 to 50,000 students in 400 different schools around the country. They ask them all sorts of questions, not only about their own drug use, about their ability to access drugs or alcohol. They ask them questions about how harmful or how risky do they think certain behaviors or substances are. They ask them things like, do you ride in a car with or without your seatbelt? So they look at all sorts of risky behaviors of children. And just released the middle of December was the initial findings from the 2014 study. There's some good news in the study in that the use of tobacco has actually gone down. The bad news is that for the first time, the teen use of e-cigarettes now surpasses the use of tobacco cigarettes. More teens are accessing and using e-cigarettes. So I thought this would be a good time to really review that, look at the pros of the e-cigarettes or vaping, as many of our folks call it. Look at some of the contradictions and look at some of the risk factors, and then some of the solutions, some of the things that the states and federal governments are doing about that. But in looking at this Monitoring the Future study, it showed that 9% of eighth graders reported using an e-cigarette in the past 30 days. 16% of the 12th graders and 17% of the 10th graders, 17% of the 12th graders reported using an e-cigarette. They really have been concerned about this because of several factors, including only 40 states now have any kind of prohibition around selling e-cigarettes to minors. So their access has been pretty unobstructed for a number of years, and these substances are also available online. So we are seeing, unfortunately, the backlash because we're experiencing more and more of these young people using e-cigarettes and using them because they think that they're safer. In this Monitoring the Future study, only 15% of eighth graders thought that there was any risk for people using e-cigarettes, compared to 62% of eighth graders that thought there was a risk of harm or damage from smoking regular cigarettes. So this is the trend that we generally see. The lower the perceived risk, the higher the utilization use. And we see this with marijuana. Marijuana also now exceeds the amount, is used more frequently than regular tobacco. So we see that as the young people perceive less risk, they're more likely to use. And this is being borne out by the fact that 15% of eighth graders think e-cigarettes are harmful, compared to 62% that think regular tobacco cigarettes are harmful. So I think that this is an important study and raises the question, are these safe and why would we use them? So welcome, David. I appreciate your being here today.
Hi, thank you. I'm glad to be here. Part of the credentials that you and I both have that you didn't mention was while we had spent some time in Canada, we took some time and went through a course on smoking cessation, and at that point really looked at how the addiction is nicotine. And the thing about these e-cigarettes is it is, in terms of getting mm-hmm. nicotine to the brain, it is equally as fast, if not faster, than cigarettes. And so the addictive potential, which is the nicotine, is still massive.
Yes, thank you for reminding us about being certified addiction healers and certified addiction therapists regarding nicotine. And you're right. The substance in tobacco that is the addictive substance is the nicotine. And with the e-cigarettes, the other potentially harmful substances in tobacco have been removed, but they are not nicotine-free. In fact, they have a substantial amount of nicotine, and this herein lies the problem, because the addictive part is still present.
Right, and it's still being geared towards keeping the next generation of addicted people addicted to nicotine. And what's been really interesting for me, just as an observational thing, mm-hmm. Is watching how people will utilize the e-cigarette. You know, they real often will say, I'm quitting smoking, so I'm getting an e-cigarette. And they will wholeheartedly swear that this is going to be the process that works for them for quitting smoking. And they'll do the e-cigarette for a period of time. But it really is kind of a hassle. They have to get the liquids. They have to make sure the thing is charged or that the batteries are there. And what I've noticed is that they'll supplement their e-cigarette with regular cigarettes for a while, and then they'll go back to regular cigarettes full-time, and generally at a greater rate than they were smoking in the past. Once upon a time, it may have been three-quarters of a pack to a pack. After the e-cigarettes, it's over a pack on a daily basis.
So the idea, and the studies bear this out, that people do not stop smoking by using an e-cigarette. In fact, as you said, many of them are using more nicotine in a day's time and are smoking more because there are few restrictions. Only three states restrict the indoor use of e-cigarettes to the same degree that they restrict the use of regular tobacco products. So they are able to smoke or vape. Let me say that. They're able to vape more frequently, more often, and in places that normally they would not be allowed to, so they actually end up using more nicotine and have a bigger problem. Now, let me be real clear. I am for anything that stops people from using tobacco. Tobacco contains thousands of substances that have potential carcinogenic and other health-related problems. Nicotine, however, is not a benign substance. For people who have cardiac problems, for people that have respiratory problems, for pregnant women, and for children, nicotine is a potentially dangerous substance. And liquid nicotine that you find in the e-cigarettes is lethal. A tablespoon of liquid nicotine that you have to, if you don't buy the preloaded vapes or the preloaded e-cigarettes, if you have to load, fill your vaporizer with liquid nicotine, a tablespoon of that coming into contact with your skin could kill an adult. A teaspoon could kill a child. Nicotine is extremely lethal and is very quickly absorbed through the skin. When we think about nicotine replacements, many people, when they're trying to stop smoking, will use a nicotine patch. And the nicotine patch tells us very quickly that nicotine is absorbed readily through our skin and can get to pretty good blood levels of nicotine relatively quickly. This liquid nicotine is even more bioavailable and potentially lethal. So just in changing out the nicotine, just in trying to refill the nicotine vaporizers, we're seeing more and more problems with people having poison related to the nicotine itself.
To the point of needing to go to the hospital?
To the point of needing to be going to the hospital, certainly to the point of calling the Poison Control Center. And we are in monitoring, in the CDC monitoring the calls to the Poison Control Center. What they found is that within a very short period of time from September 2010 to, I think it was February 2014, the number of calls going into the poison control centers escalated dramatically, and that many of these calls were related to difficulty with skin irritation and coughing and eye irritation, but some of these were actually related to palpitations, to potential overdose and difficulty with breathing, and that the calls were related to children under the age of 5. So the actual CDC was able to look at poison control center calls and found that over 2,400 calls were placed regarding it. 60% was directly related to nausea, vomiting, or eye irritation related to the use of the vaping. 1 in 6 was related to problems from the vapor themselves. And that's not problems from the person vaping. It's the secondhand vaping that children, elderly, people with cardiac problems, people who are pregnant, women who are pregnant, will have increased problems with breathing and problems with their heart rate related to this. The other problem that they're finding in the children is that they're actually eating this. Because, as you know, these liquid nicotine is flavored, bubblegum, vanilla, bacon, lemonade, pizza, Dr. Pepper, all of these flavorings are put into this, and little children are drinking it or tasting it and then having very toxic reactions to this. And lots of concern now because many of these toxic exposures are in children and children under the age of 5. We're going to take a break now. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about some of the risks of e-cigarettes. Thanks so much for listening.
This is David Donaldson with the Atlanta Healing Center, conveniently located in Lawrenceville, Georgia. At AHC, your success is our goal. Addiction recovery is about more than just not using. It's about becoming a whole person and addressing all aspects of your physical, psychological, and social needs. Please call us at 770-696-9862, or you can reach us on the web at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is Dr. George. Join me Wednesday mornings at 9 o'clock for Medicine on Call. Learn strategies to protect you and your family in the age of Obamacare.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, Medical Director for the Atlanta Healing Center. Our team is able to offer a multitude of treatment options such as quantitative EEG, also known as brain mapping, hormonal and nutritional assessments, neuropsychological testing, and cognitive therapy, along with traditional 12-step facilitation. And we can even offer you, if appropriate, a gentle medically managed detox. Please contact us at 770-696-9862.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Susan Blank here with David Donaldson, and we're talking about e-cigarettes, the risks, particularly to children. The Monitoring the Future study shows us that more and more kids are using e-cigarettes than regular tobacco for the first time in the 40-year history of the Monitoring the Future program. The CDC is seeing calls go up from one call a month to well over 200 per poison control center per month related to toxic exposure to the substances or to the vapor from the e-cigarettes. At least half of these calls are related to children and toxic exposure. I'm also concerned that there's a real strong appeal to the marketing to children. Now, tobacco companies who are also part of the manufacturing and distributing of these e-cigarettes and the vaporizing kits have long been
restricted from
marketing to kids because really they were doing a lot of direct marketing to kids. The Joe Camel, for example, those restrictions don't apply.
No, it's interesting. I can think back on my childhood and the gummy cigars and candy cigarettes that were always like in a Christmas stocking or something, and how it was just a regular thing, but society said no, and government came down, and they disappeared. But now with the invention of e-cigarettes, they're coming out, and the flavors you mentioned in gummy bears, and the packaging has you know, beautiful pictures of gummy bears just light up like a rainbow or something that just really grabs a child. And there's none of the restrictions that have been placed on the tobacco industries for tobacco are in place with the e-cigarettes. That, for example, tobacco products are required by law to sell their product face-to-face.
Right.
So that the merchant is able to check the ID and make sure the person is over 18 or older. Not true with e-cigarettes. They can buy that online. They can order it through the mail.
And there's no attempt to check age or even those little boxes that check here if you're over 18. I mean, not that that's a huge deterrent, but there's not even that attempt.
To say this person is of legal age to get a tobacco product or
right.
a highly addictive product. It used to, well, with tobacco, they've been restricted from putting flavorings into cigarettes because once upon a time they put a lot of different flavorings in there to appeal to different segments of the population, and that's all gone away. They geared a lot of marketing towards the young adults and making it look like the cool thing, when in reality it's just keeping the nicotine addiction huge. And what I find so interesting is that e-cigarettes were originally developed to help people quit smoking. It's
right.
a smoking cessation product, and it still gets that marketing. But if you want a prescription for e-cigarettes to help quit smoking, the cost is astronomical, and your insurance company is not going to help you
right.
go for it.
And it's not FDA approved. In fact, it doesn't fall under the FDA at all currently. The Food and Drug Administration has been charged over the years with monitoring, controlling, and developing policy around tobacco sales, accessibility, and marketing strategies. The FDA is not in charge of e-cigarettes currently, and that's one of the calls to action that we hope will be carried on by listeners of this show and by other interested parties, that the FDA needs to be in charge of monitoring and controlling. This is not listed. It's not approved. Studies, in fact, show that it doesn't help stop smoking. But like you say, David, that is the marketing ploy for many people that use this and it will help you stop smoking. This is safe to use, or safer than
tobacco
products. And so they aren't restricted. They can have marketing. They're able to market at the Super Bowl and the Grammys and the Academy Awards.
And on TV.
On TV, radio, anywhere. They are allowed to advertise and market their products, and many of the ads, as you say, are clearly directed towards children and adolescents. They're not. I don't know many adults that are going out to buy gummy bear flavored nicotine. clearly this is directed towards kids. Now, maybe the bacon. I could go with the bacon, but I'm not sure the gummy bears.
But and they're using the same old techniques of making it look like the cool people
right.
are the ones that are using it. So in the ads on TV, they're using very attractive people doing these cool activities, like mm-hmm. just like they used to do in the old days with alcohol and with cigarettes. And eventually those products were banned from television advertising. And the same thing is needing to happen here, because all we're doing is creating an addiction earlier in a person's life, and we know the earlier the exposure, the greater the difficulty of getting clean.
The flavoring, the ease of access, the availability to purchase this without any kind of hassle factor at all. Even if you're purchasing it face-to-face, there's restrictions currently now in 40 states, but still 10 states in the District of Columbia do not restrict anything about sales to children. So these products are very readily available and very easily accessed. And the marketing technique of implying that these are not harmful and an excellent alternative has convinced many kids and a whole lot of adults that this is a really good thing, when in fact it's really not a good thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. I just was reading about a congressional study that actually showed that teens will show addictive behavior to nicotine, to tobacco, 2 days after they have their first cigarette. So it's hitting the young adolescent developing brain really, really quickly, and at a much slower rate than it would with the e-cigarettes. So one can just speculate as to how great that addictive potential is on a young adolescent developing brain.
Yes, we see the trajectory of addiction being much slower and lower consequence for people who start using drugs and alcohol after the age of 18, certainly after the age of 21. But the addictive potential of these substances, particularly nicotine. Now, we know that nicotine is the toughest addiction. We may only have 15 to 20% of the adult population in the United States addicted to other substances, but we see the addiction rate to nicotine at around 30%. And when we look at different patient populations, like folks who already have the disease of addiction or people with serious mental illness, these rates go up to 75 to 95% of folks who have these other co-occurring disorders being addicted to nicotine. So this is a tough addiction to treat. And when we're starting it in little kids and we're appealing to them and giving them access, we're buying ourselves a bunch of trouble. This is a $3 billion industry around the world and about $1.7 billion industry in the United States in the last year. That is a lot of money that is being made. And it's been very interesting to see how the tobacco manufacturers themselves have come through with their marketing techniques, because interestingly, the tobacco manufacturers are now putting very strong warnings on their e-cigarettes and their vaping instruments. The warnings are even more strong than traditional cigarettes. Now, they're not required to put any warning at all on these, but the manufacturer of Altria, which makes Marlboro cigarettes, warns that nicotine is addictive and habit-forming and is very toxic by inhalation in contact with the skin or if swallowed. That is the warning that they are putting on this packaging. Reynolds America, that makes Camel cigarettes, has an e-cigarette called VUs, and it indicates on their packaging that these products are not intended for persons who have an unstable heart condition, high blood pressure, diabetes, or persons who are at risk for heart disease or taking medicine for depression or asthma. Others are putting language around not intended for pregnancy, not safe for children. Now, the tobacco industry is getting a lot of play out of this, that they're voluntarily doing this, trying to combat, you know, any misconception about their marketing techniques, and to be to appear very responsible, more responsible than smaller e-cigarette companies. There's some question by Robert Jackler, who's a professor at the Stanford School of Medicine, who has studied cigarettes and cigarette advertising for a number of years, and he thinks this is really probably a very cynical business strategy, that actually in doing this, they are, number one, reducing their liability. Mm-hmm. So that anyone who gets addicted to this, anyone who has heart problems or pregnancy complications, clearly they were warned, and that it may be a way to make sure that smaller companies may be less appealing, their sales may be less appealing than would somebody, you know, like the manufacturer of Marlboro or Camel cigarettes. So they're into this big time, and they're making a lot of money.
They are very slick. Very slick.
And it's not cheap. If you get a vaporizer, some of these vaporizers can run into the hundreds of dollars just to buy the vaporizer itself. And then the canisters or the liquid to refill the canisters, again, very expensive.
But and it's that same prestige, like the lighters. I'm forgetting the name of those fancy lighters in the old days. Zippos.
Zippo
lighters that you had. All these, a Zippo lighter could run anywhere from $5 to $50, depending on how nice the cover was. And the same thing with the vapors. You can see they're becoming a fashion accessory that people pull out of their breast pocket and have their one little toke, and put it back with that same sort of ego.
And ritual. Which is the other reason that I have a lot of concern around trying to use an e-cigarette to help with smoking cessation from tobacco products, because they are very directly imitating the same kinds of behaviors, the rituals around smoking, the actual hand-to-mouth, inhaling the vapor versus the smoke. All of those kinds of things are very similar and parallel. We don't allow our people who are IV drug users to inject their detox medication. We don't have our patients who have snorted cocaine to snort their antidepressant. We don't want people to be using these methodologies. In fact, many times I have to talk to patients about, you need to go get your blood work done. How is that going to be for you to have someone have to tie off your vein and access the vein and withdraw blood? Mm-hmm. It is very triggering for people. I have to be careful how I give them some of their medications. They may have to not take it in the ideal route. We may have to make modifications. So we don't want this imitative kind of behavior. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. We're going to take a break now. We'll come back and talk more about the risks and possible benefits of e-cigarettes. Thanks for listening.
Hello, this is Michael Daly with Atlanta Healing Center. We know that addiction is a brain disease. Addiction is a family disease. Addiction is a treatable disease. We have a caring professional staff with over 30 years experience to help you and your loved ones in your recovery. You can reach us at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctor's conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, Medical Director for the Atlanta Healing Center. Our team is able to offer a multitude of treatment options, such as quantitative EEG, also known as brain mapping, hormonal and nutritional assessments, neuropsychological testing, and cognitive therapy, along with traditional 12-step facilitation. And we can even offer you, if appropriate, a gentle medically managed detox. Please contact us at 770-696-9862.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Susan Blank, along with David Donaldson from the Atlanta Healing Center, and we're talking about e-cigarettes. Before the break, I made mention of the possible benefits, and that's an interesting...
caught me by surprise, actually.
An interesting thought. And I have to go back to my statement that I really want people to stop using tobacco products. Ideally, it would be wonderful if people used the vaporing system and lowered their dose of nicotine over a prescribed period of time and discontinued their use of nicotine. That would be ideal. Much like medical marijuana, though, we have other less harmful, less dangerous, less potentially addictive ways to helping people stop smoking. So I would be really happy to hear and understand that some people do quit smoking with the vaping or the electronic cigarettes. I'm just not sure that's what we're going to hear, but that would be great if that really did work.
I can certainly think of people over the years who have successfully quit with this technology. Part of the difference is that the products that they had even 2 years ago didn't have all this glamour associated with it. It looked like a much more medical
product.
Mm-hmm. So when they would pull it out and have a puff of it, it kind of looked like a big pill or something, and it didn't look like a cigarette, and it didn't have the social connections.
Or the good flavors.
It was just a burst of nicotine, kind of like when you first take a bite of the Nicorette gum. It's not something you love. It's just something that's calming your brain.
Mm-hmm.
Because the reality is we know that when people are trying to quit nicotine, and they have nicotine addiction like many of these adolescents and young adults do, that their brain feels insane. It feels like there's a huge piece missing because they've got a lot of nicotine receptors,
mm-hmm.
and they have nothing feeling it. So working with somebody who's decided this is the method they want to use, at first identifying a time period and identifying rituals that need to be altered or changed is conceivably possible, although I have not seen it successful with these modern day devices.
Yes. When they were introduced back in 2007, initially manufactured in China, they did have this little red thing at the end that went bright like Rudolph's nose when they were puffing on it, I guess to
visually look like
a cigarette. But they weren't fooling everybody, and they were sort of a bit of a joke. Now this has spun into this huge industry, and like you say, now there's a lot more status and prestige, and people are under the assumption many times that this is so much healthier, that, you know, it's like I've gone gluten-free, so I'm somehow superior to everybody else, never mind that I don't have celiac and I don't have a problem, but I'm so much healthier than you. I'm using a vape, so I'm so much healthier than you that continue to smoke.
You know, the original products also did not produce so much vapor. There was enough for just kind of a mm-hmm. hit, and the person would take it, and you would see that little red light glow, and there wouldn't be this big exhalation like you see now with the modern products, and that has got to be part of what's also reinforcing the whole social aspect and ritualistic aspects of the vapor culture?
The vapor itself is problematic because, unlike smoke, this is actually using water and aerosolizing the nicotine. So the nicotine particles themselves are now more likely to precipitate, and you are more likely to have problems of secondhand vaping smoke than you are secondhand tobacco smoke. Now, yes, some of the toxic chemicals are missing from vaping, the vaporize, but the exposure to nicotine is much greater and potentially more harmful for pets, for small children, for people at medical risk that are now sitting on your chair or crawling across your floor or lying in your bed. Remember how rapidly nicotine is absorbed through your skin. Nicotine gets displaced with all of this vapor all over your clothes, all over your furniture, all over your desk, all over your car, and anybody coming in contact with it is likely to have access now through their skin to the nicotine.
There's also a lot of talk about heavy metals.
Yes.
In the vapor that is getting directly into people's lungs and into people's systems.
So, yes, because you have the battery, the energy source may be a lithium or a cadmium battery. So you can have some toxic exposure from these particular substances that are in not necessarily the liquid itself, but the propellant, the vaporizer. There is a number of toxic chemicals that are found in this. Propylene glycol is part of the propellant. Now, we know that this is toxic when it's ingested. We know that the antifreeze-like substances that we find in the liquid and the propellant are toxic from swallowing. Studies haven't really been done. What happens when you heat this up, when you now inhale it, you're taking it in a different form and a different concentration, the potential for this to be really lethal is or toxic is very high. So the other thing is that because they're not regulated by the FDA, we really don't know what kinds of chemicals and additives, power sources for the vaporizer and the propellant, we don't know what they are because they don't have to be listed on the
But it is interesting that it's something that even the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, is beginning to be noticing and taking a stance on, because we're breathing in, or people who are using vaporing products are breathing in 200 to 300 nanometers of these substances, and what they're saying is that this is the tiniest possible product that can go into the airways, and it's getting lodged in the lungs, and we don't know what the long-term impact of that, of directly putting all of these particles into our system, is going to be.
The risk, several studies have shown that the inhalation of these nanoparticles of nicotine or the propellants are actually inflammatory. They can cause lung, throat, and mouth irritation. They can cause reactions, and particularly if you already have a reactive airway disease like COPD or emphysema or asthma, the irritants from inhaling this vapor can cause significant problems. And there's a study that was done indicating that it's even possible that they are making bacterial infections more resistant to antibiotics. So this study that was done recently at the Tobacco Control Center and Research at the University of Southern California says that e-cigarettes deliver this high level of nanoparticles that trigger inflammation, and that this inflammation then makes it much more likely that if a person is exposed to a bacterial infection like MRSA, that they are much more likely to contract this infection. In fact, Laura Crotty Alexander reported to the American Thoracic Society in San Diego that she exposed methicillin-resistant Staph aureus, or MRSA, to the e-cigarette vapors. And what they found was that it was much more, even more difficult to kill this bacteria once it had been exposed to these vapors.
Supercharged.
We're supercharging. She's a critical care physician and a pulmonary expert. So while this may be less toxic than tobacco, it's certainly not safe. It's certainly not benign, and it's certainly of great concern because so much of this hasn't been studied. We really don't know. What we do know is not looking good. And regulation, I think, is going to be a very important part of our next steps. Now, as of December 12th, we found the CDC did a study looking at what was happening on a state level regarding sales to minors, regarding use of these products in public places, in areas, businesses, public buildings that have been restricted to tobacco products. Where are the states with it? And 40 states had finally prohibited the sales to minors, even Georgia, back in July of 2014, a little bit of a latecomer to the group, banned the sales to minors. Now, there's no real monitoring that goes on because it's still not illegal to sell these through the mail. But at a convenience store, at a tobacco shop, at a an outlet for these products, they're not allowed to sell to minors under 18. Only three states have prohibited the use of these devices in bars, in restaurants, and in smoke-free workplaces. Three states have not done anything about prohibiting sales to minors, and these states are Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Texas. They haven't made any attempt, nor does it look like they're going to make any attempt to limit these in the near future. The hope is that the federal government will turn this over to the FDA and make it part of the FDA's responsibility to begin to regulate and control. Right now, that hasn't been done, unfortunately. But we hope that as we look at strategies that have helped decrease nicotine access to minors, that some of those same strategies will be able to be applied in this case. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. We're going to take a break. We'll talk a little bit more about strategies to help you combat smoking.
This is David Donaldson with the Atlanta Healing Center, conveniently located in Lawrenceville, Georgia. At AHC, your success is our goal. Addiction recovery is about more than just not using. It's about becoming a whole person and addressing all aspects of your physical, psychological, and social needs. Please call us at 770-696-9862, or you can reach us on the web at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is Dr. George. Join me Wednesday mornings at 9 o'clock for Medicine on Call. On Medicine on Call, we talk about more than medicine. It's about how to take control of your mind, body, and spirit.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, host of Detailing Addiction and medical director of the Atlanta Healing Center. Please join me on Tuesday afternoons at 4 p.m. This is Dr. Susan Blank, medical director for the Atlanta Healing Center. Our team is able to offer a multitude of treatment options such as quantitative EEG, also known as brain mapping, hormonal and nutritional assessments, neuropsychological testing, and cognitive therapy, along with traditional 12-step facilitation. And we can even offer you, if appropriate, a gentle medically managed detox. Please contact us at 770-696-9862.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Susan Blank along with David Donaldson, and we're talking about e-cigarettes, some of the strides that have been made over the last several years in terms of states taking some action regarding the free-for-all that has been the e-cigarette market. And happy to say that at least 40 states have made it illegal to sell to minors. The CDC and other groups are asking that we consider using some of the similar strategies that have helped reduce tobacco use in the United States. We know that tobacco use is at an all-time low, though it continues to be more than we would like, because tobacco-related illnesses are the number one preventable cause of death in the United States. But the numbers have gone down significantly, and a number of strategies have been employed that have resulted in this. One was a tobacco tax. Increasing the tobacco tax, making it more and more expensive, doesn't cut it out, but hopefully it may deter and decrease some use, and we've seen that. Certainly the sales of tobacco products over the Internet. You cannot sell cigarettes over the Internet. So banning that, limiting access. Looking at clean air, and the rights of non-smokers to not be exposed to second-hand or third-hand smoke is an important part of the strategy. Many states are doing all sorts of things to make sure that the air is clean, that emission levels are lower, and banning smoking in public places has been one of those. This has had another effect, I think, that's important, which is that it's made it less socially acceptable. More and more people are finding it more and more difficult to smoke tobacco, and as companies are offering discounts on health insurance or life insurance to non-smokers, as companies are putting forth some hiring restrictions around tobacco use in the workplace, more and more people have been motivated to stop smoking. So some of these things, I think, could be really helpful and very important in trying to decrease access and acceptability of these kinds of products. Hopefully, we really will find a way to help people stop smoking that is much safer. And I think the Atlanta Healing Center is on its way to working directly with folks who have tried, who are still trying, and who really want to stop smoking.
But it is definitely a focus that we have at the Atlanta Healing Center. It's a regular conversation whether people are smoking or not that we have. It's not something that we allow to just go under the table. Once upon a time, there was the message that you do not quit smoking in the first year, that it makes the first year of your recovery from other substances, that would increase your relapse potential with those things. And we know that the research shows that that's not true. We know that people have much better success rates with any of their recoveries if they quit smoking at the same time. So we keep it a regular part of the dialogue. But we also really look at what has been shown to work with people who are sincerely ready to stop smoking. So we will use other nicotine replacement products. The combination of a variety of nicotine replacement products with coaching and with support so that they're being titrated just like you would with other substances to get the appropriate dosage that a person needs. Because the idea that somebody who's smoking a pack a day or smoking a pack and a half a day of cigarettes is going to go buy a 21 milligram patch and pop it on and they're going to feel fine and they can step down over the course of 5 weeks and be happy, joyous, and free is just not realistic. And it sets a lot of people up. So we're working with people who are ready to stop smoking, learn how to do it effectively. Part of what we help them understand is that there's not a rush to get off of the nicotine replacement therapy. What the research has shown is that stopping the therapy too soon is the number one cause of mm-hmm. their failure, so keeping them on that longer. We're also working with some prominent scientists and developers and looking at what substances are being depleted from someone who's been a long-term smoker and looking at what we can do to help replace some of those substances in the brain and the body to help alleviate cravings, to help alleviate that insane feeling that if the truly addicted smoker doesn't get some assistance with, they're going to just become sneaky smokers.
Sneaky smokers.
Those people who only smoke in the car and you see them driving down the road and that's the only place and they get out of the car and you know, but they'll deny it to the end. They are the people that we're trying to reach out to and let them know that there is a solution that isn't likely going to be the e-cigarette. Because our experience so far with the e-cigarette is that it's just been something that sustains the addiction until it comes back full force.
Right. And in many cases, it comes back full force and at a higher rate, just like we find with other substances. Relapses are worse than the use rate is worse than when...
Yeah,
before
they stop.
You really
start back at where you stopped.
And it's very sad but true. The organization that trained David, Michael, and other members of our staff is the Tobacco Healing Center. Their parent company is Libertas, and we are working with them on developing successful ways of really helping people stop smoking. Dr. Murray Kelly has been a guest on this show before, and he has such a passion around helping people stop smoking. But we realize that there has to be a multidimensional approach to this. Just say no does not work very well. The nicotine replacement products, when they went over the counter, the milligram rate is less than you would have expected, and so the recommended doses may not be adequate. That doesn't mean you go back outside and cover yourself with nicotine patches and hope for the best, because that can have disastrous results too. But we can do urine testing and saliva testing that will tell us how much nicotine replacement a person needs. Because the cravings, you're right, if we don't replace the nicotine, if we don't give them adequate doses, they're not going to be successful. And then tapering gradually, much as we would with some of our other medications, taper gradually so that the brain can accommodate more easily and they have a greater chance of success. Other supplements that may be helpful, you mentioned the replenish. People who are actively smoking will need to replace certain vitamins and minerals in their body that are automatically being depleted by the nicotine. So even if you're in the, as we'd call, pre-contemplative or contemplative stage of change, you're thinking about it, you're wondering about it, you probably could benefit from some supplements like Restore that helps give people replacement of nutrients and vitamins that they're missing because they're smoking. Then Resist is a supplement that we know, based on good scientific literature and data, that we know that this particular supplement is very helpful with cravings. So the Resist part. And then Replenish, things that you may need to help your body stay healthy and to continue your success with your recovery from tobacco. All of these things will be available at the Atlanta Healing Center, along with specific groups and individual coaching. So looking forward to the new year and having this particular program open for our patients.
I found myself in a Friends binge this weekend on Netflix. And Susan's looking at me like, where are we going? But I had never seen the first season of Friends, because when it was on, I was in school or working or something.
Or probably a baby.
Or a baby. No, I'm not quite that young. But in this, in I want to say it was the fifth episode, Chandler Bing, who's a notorious ex-smoker, was a several months clean of smoking, and one of the other characters was having to have a cigarette for an audition, and he smoked it wrong. And so Chandler grabbed that cigarette to show him how to smoke it right. And he said, oh, my God. There was such a return to his face of peace and calm and rightness in the world that this is truly a television depiction, but a real one for the person who's a nicotine addict. And so the reality that that for a certain portion of the population, relapse rates are huge, and for people in recovery, the smoking rate is in some studies as high as 90%. It's a population that needs some support and needs some help, and hopefully we'll be able to provide that.
Thank you all for listening. Thank you, David. And we'll see you all next week on Detailing Addiction.
This is America's Webradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.